Welcome to the Certainty Advice Podcast, where advice starts with your best interests in mind, helping you achieve more in your financial life. And now, here's your host, founder of the Certainty Advice Group, Jim Stackpool.
G'day everybody, how are you? Jim Stackpool, founder of Certainty Advice Group, with another in the Certainty Advice Podcast series, aiming to help all you listening and many Australians hopefully find greater financial certainty in your busy lives. Covering the trends, pitfalls, particularly at the moment, as the lurching old product industry moves towards more of a profession. One, hopefully without any real or perceived bias, so that you can get advice that is both valuable, impartial, and affordable. Our topic today is superannuation, and realising that great expectation was set for us so many years ago by Kelty and Keating and others. Interestingly, you know, the focus on poor service in superannuation took another step. Even just today, it was announced that the Australian Securities Investment Commission, ASIC as it's called, is taking action, civil action, I must admit, not criminal, against National Australia Bank, overcharging some $100 million in fees to more than half a million of their superannuation fund members for services they didn't even get. And whilst it's a civil action rather than a criminal action, there's no doubt the brand damage is going to stick. The action isn't directed at the banks. It's interesting. It's showing up, I think, what the Royal Commission is doing all the great work on. It's showing up that the action's been taken against the trustee. So the trustee is the person that's responsible for the best interests of the fund members, but the trustee is also employed by the bank. And so here you've got someone that's getting paid by the bank as the manufacturer of the product to represent the best interests of its members who are in fact in the bank's products. You can see how it starts getting a wicked web. So the trustee was always on a tough gig, having to represent members on one hand and getting paid by the product provider on the other. But I think this is really at the heart of the structures that have flourished in the current market, not just with National Australia Bank, but elsewhere. Understandably, as we hear more about this stuff, leave a very bad taste of conflict, which further disenchants us and what power we have over some of these groups who are meant to be looking after our super. But anyway, today I have Martin Harkness. Martin is owner-director with a fast-growing InFocus Netherlands boutique advisory firm based on that great stretch of road, Stirling Highway, I think it is, connecting Perth with Freo. Here, Martin has a very unique approach to delivering quality advice and focusing on mainly, I think, working couples. Martin, Paula and their team work on from all over suburban Perth and keeping them all on their own unique financial path in their own unique way. But we are talking about realising super. And I want you to listen out. Martin's got a very unique big picture approach that he would take if he were in charge of superannuation policy in this country today. He's obviously a visionary and has thought a lot about this. Also listen for what are the proper conversations that anyone with super, Martin believes, should be having, fairly regularly in fact. And also listen for Martin's very, very clever, well, anecdote of the difference between, what's the difference between an old man and a gentleman? But anyway, I started by asking Martin, what's wrong, Martin, with superannuation in Australia today?
There's quite a number of issues, Jim, with our superannuation system as far as I can see it. The main ones, as far as I can see, is too much uncertainty surrounding future changes, given that successive governments seem to be targeting high-income earners, Jim, and saying that they're effectively using superannuation as a tax dodge. And we know that there may be 1% or 2% of superannuants that do that, but we shouldn't be designing a system for the majority where we run with the minority problems all the time. So there may be these instances, but it's such a small section of the overall superannuation community that what happens with all these changes is it results in an overall lack of confidence in the whole system. And I think because of that lack of confidence, Jim, a large part of the community, yeah, they take little interest in it. They're not involved in the forward planning. They focus on the best returns and the lowest fees, whereas the reality of the situation, Jim, and it's a hard reality, is that unless we save more into it, the better returns and the lower fees are frankly secondary, yeah? Because we're never going to have enough money in there to start with. So it's important that they look at superannuation as an overall position for retirement incomes policy, not just as a one-off.
Look, it's sort of like tax act, isn't it? You know, the politicians can't help themselves to win votes in an extra 3 years in Parliament by continually playing around with the Tax Act. It's only inevitable as the superannuation pile grows from $2 trillion to $4 trillion in 10 years, and then $9 trillion, I think they're predicting, in another 10 years.
Yep.
that they're going to be very, very hard pressed to keep their hands off it. But the consequences, as you say, is that people lose confidence in this ever shifting goalposts. So if you were head of superannuation policy today, what would be your leadership push to sort of try and stymie that and raise the confidence that people have about their superannuation?
I think first off, Jim, that there's a couple of points I would relate to. Firstly, I think superannuation shouldn't be seen in isolation. You know, as a government, as a nation, I think we need to have more of a debate about what type of Australia we want, and we shouldn't just isolate superannuation as this great tax vehicle for retirees. Because what tends to happen is we look at retirees and we get this jealousy of the ones who've got the money and those who haven't got the money, and as a society, we become broken by it. So I think superannuation, if I was in charge, would be part of a total conversation around tax savings and the relationship between elderly people and young people and what type of Australia do we want to live in. We live in the best country in the world physically, but the gap between the rich and the poor is getting more and more, and there needs to be some sort of understanding that if we're going to defer our consumption today for the future benefit, that the money that we set aside is going to be there and is not going to be handled by the politicians to get around their three-year election cycle and to get rid of their mismanagement of the economy. So I think the overall picture needs to be looked at, Jim, before we say, well, what can we do with superannuation? And then I think it's a case of educating the people to say, well, you need to save more of your overall income in order to have a better quality of life as we go forward. The problem is we don't have a proper conversation, Jim. We keep getting told by the government that they've got all this debt and they need to be changing their attitude towards how they raise taxes. But on the flip side, they keep wanting to reduce taxes for individuals and for companies. And the problem is the largest cohort of the population are the baby boomers. We're all coming to retirement age. There's less people behind us. And if we're reducing tax on a lower population number, that means that we're going to have less tax revenue. So the government can't afford their retirement incomes policy or their healthcare policy or whatever. So if we're really serious, and then that opens up the door to, well, how do we fund all these things? Do we just penalise the people who've got the $2 trillion and the $4 trillion and the $9 trillion and take the rug from under them when they're retired? Or do we actually say, well, what type of Australia do we need? Because if that's the case and there's less people, we're going to need more people to come in. So that leads to more migration, the more infrastructure spend, leads to more cities being built, leads to more density in suburbs. So we can't just isolate superannuation and say, look, this is the issue. We need to look at the overall aspect of how we want to live and where we want to live and the cost of that. And so I think if I was in charge, Jim, the first thing I would do is to be saying that there needs to be a greater understanding that if we're going to have $2 trillion or $4 trillion or $9 trillion, what's the objectives of that? Yeah? And I was really disappointed the government recently have been saying that the SMSF Association, for example, have been trying to push them to define what superannuation is for. And the whole intent should have been, as Keating originally outlined and as most people think it should be, is that if we're forced to compulsory save into superannuation, that should mean that when we get to retirement age, we shouldn't need to depend on the state and we shouldn't need to get an age pension from the government. And yet the government have changed the goalpost there and I'm now saying, well, actually all superannuation is designed to do is to supplement your Centrelink age pension. Well, I just don't see how it's affordable, Jim, you know?
There's a lot of issues there, Martin.
There's lots of issues.
Big L leadership required in a country which, unfortunately, you've just even seen the petty issues going on in the last few months with changing of politicians because we didn't like the colour of your socks. And he didn't even mention anything in there about the lack of social spirit, for want of a much better term, that the banks and some of the funds have been carrying on playing around with members' money that are not in best interest, either spending on events that don't need to be spending on or fees for no service for taking fees out of people's super for services they've never delivered. But I hear it's a superannuation. What you're eventually saying is superannuation in isolation is sort of like trying to talk about, you know, the road system in an isolation of people's transport or travel desires, habits, wants, needs, desires.
It is, Jim, yeah. And that's the issue that I see. And the Road Commission has obviously shone a light on the abhorrent behaviour of the industry as a whole, and obviously, hopefully, that some changes will be there. I don't think it's just the behaviour of the retail super funds, the industry super funds, the trustees of the banks, whatever it may be. I think there's a bigger picture before we get to all those things. And I think that if we're going to have $9 trillion sitting in super in 20 years, we really need to say, what's the system for? What's its purpose? And how do we measure it? Because there doesn't seem to be any measurement, Jim. I was reading some numbers the other day that we all know that we've got a rising population, and where you guys live in Sydney, there's lots of infrastructure problems. So I was reading that in the West Connex road building project, for example, it costs $473 million per kilometre to build a road. Well, I don't think that's sustainable. And I think if there's $9.5 trillion in super, and that's obviously an asset that we can use to build our infrastructure, how do superannuants get the best bang for their buck? And I don't think there's any measurement of that at all, Jim, and I don't think there's any consequence as to how people's money is managed, because it's just too big, and the government haven't got a system in place to measure and manage and say, are these investments fit for purpose?
Yeah, and today I read we've got a junior minister that's just been appointed head, I think, of the new superannuation and finance portfolios after the last upheaval of government. Yet again, condoning what you're saying, that it's an afterthought. We haven't got a senior minister in the senior front bench that's sort of driving and pushing this conversation. So if we say sunlight's the best disinfectant long-term, transparency, openness, we start to hear more of this leadership that you're espousing and obviously providing in InFocus Netherlands to your clients. So what are the three questions that anyone listening to this podcast with you now today, Martin, needs to know the answers to for their own superannuation situation?
Jim, the things I ask clients, the three things I think are important are, why should I bother saving towards my retirement? That's the first question. Secondly, how can I contribute to the success of my super? In other words, how can I take part in making sure that when I get to retirement, my retirement is dignified and pleasurable? And thirdly, what do I actually want in retirement? What does it look like? Why is it important to me? Where's the value in my life and the purpose in my life? But there's lots of papers out at the moment, Jim, suggesting that the elderly, when they get to retirement, that they lose their purpose, that they don't perceive themselves to be valuable to society. And I think it's not just a monetary thing, Jim. I think we've got so many skills and such knowledge and such great people in our retirement cohort that should be adding to society, whereas the superannuation system at the moment seems to be putting them in a box and saying, guys, you've had all of these tax benefits and it's really screwed our country up, so therefore you're going to be penalised now. So I think the whole attitude changes, but they're the main three questions I ask, and I use a very old simple adage that I learned 30 years ago, Jim, which is old and boring, but I use it with every new client I see. And I asked them a simple question of what is the difference between an old man and an elderly gentleman? And the answer being the size of his wallet. So I think each of us needs to ask, when we get old, do we want to be an old man or do we want to be an elderly gentleman? And once we answer that question, we can then start to design how you want to live your life in retirement, how much it's going to cost, and therefore how much it's going to save.
It's nice, practical, clear, understandable. And you raise another issue here about what is, and obviously you take this on in InFocus Netherlands there, Martin, that your job is more than allocating assets and protecting risk, discussing tax, obviously, minimising cost. Your job here is continuing your clients, at least, to have this sense and direction towards a dignified, respectful and contributory with responsibility, it sounds like, retirement, that keeping your purpose. So I would say that if people are dealing with you, am I fair to say then that one of your objectives is to make sure they keep their purpose?
Absolutely, Jim, yeah. And we always go back to what their purpose is and how they can fulfill their purpose. Because at the end of the day, Jim, money's just a tool, and wealth's just a tool that we use to live our lives to how we see fit. And so unless we've got those values and those purposes in our life, it doesn't matter how much money we've got in the bank or superannuation or properties. It doesn't really matter unless it's a means to an end. So our job at InFocus Netherlands is to try and discuss with the client what their purpose is, what the value is to them, to their family, to society as a greater whole, and then help them achieve all of those things they want to achieve. And if money is part of that, we can help them with the money, and all of those things are given. But it's more keeping them on track and keeping them true to their values and their purpose, so that they lead a dignified and a fulfilled life.
Mm-hmm. And again, so I imagine most Australians probably aren't expecting when they walk to see a financial advisor that they're going to have a conversation, as you've just outlined, about talking about the purpose and what dignified life looks like in future. How do your clients initially react to your approach?
With some surprise, Jim, to be honest, because most of them have just come in. And again, most people, there's a reason why they've come in, and they usually bring their superannuation statements or their assets and liabilities statements. And all of those things are important, Jim, but you have to have the context. So I say to them, that's great, and we'll look at all that, and we're good at that, and we will get to all of that. But to be fair, any decent financial planner in Australia should be able to do all of those things. So that's a given, but let's put that to the side for a minute and tell me about yourself and your life and your role in your family and your role in society and what you want to achieve, and then I'll work out how the money can best support that. And some of those conversations are difficult, Jim, and I think, again, one of the issues I see with not just superannuation but this whole Australian society and the whole Western society really is that people in positions of leadership are scared to tell people the hard facts. And the hard facts are, Jim, that if you look back into the 1970s, national household savings rates in Australia were above 20%. Now they're between 2 to 3%. At no point in time, if you save 2 to 3% of your surplus income, are you going to have a dignified retirement. And I think we need to first put things in context with people and then explain to them why the current system and what they're doing is not going to be successful in getting the outcomes that they achieve. So that's why I think the big conversation from leadership and from us as financial planners and us at InFocus Netherlands, we can do that one-on-one with clients, but it's one client at a time, where the leadership from the politicians who are talking to millions of people at a time, they need to have similar conversations. And it's a bit disingenuous to me to keep hearing them say that we can keep the pension age where it is, we can reduce taxes for individuals and companies, we can all have a great healthcare system, but where's the money going to come from? Because all we're doing is putting future problems and future debts on the next generation. And again, from an advisor, it's very easy to sit down here and say to a client, I assume you love your children. And if you love your children, why are you forcing all of this debt of your lifestyle onto them for the future? Because kids of today are going to leave university or leave TAFE with a hex debt. Property prices are so high that it's difficult to get a deposit for a house. If you look at Western society, birth rates are coming down because people can't afford to have children. I was in Hong Kong recently where couples are no longer having kids because they can't afford a property to purchase and raise a kid. So you have to make a choice. So again, it all comes back to this big picture of how we want to live. And as an individual, I can talk to clients day to day on that, but as leaders in the country, so the superannuation funds, the government themselves, we need to be having a better conversation with the people.
So Martin, we need the big conversations, absolutely crucial, but you're also battling with an apathetic community who, even though for some it is their biggest asset in their lives, if it was sitting in a bank account, they'd have a much sharper mindset around it, but they don't towards their superannuation. Is that part of the objectives of the big conversations, to make it make them less apathetic about this thing that is theirs? It's a great savings vehicle done properly. It's, why are we so apathetic towards it? And what to do about it?
Yeah, and I don't know if that's a cultural thing, Jim, as well, because Australians are pretty laid back. This she'll be right, mate attitude is pervasive. And I think that, we assume that when we get into our 60s or 70s or whenever the government allows us to retire these days, that everything's going to be okay. So our job as InFocus Netherlands is to try and and look into that and delve into that further and try and have a conversation about, well, why do we think things are going to be okay? And I'm a pretty simple guy when I talk to clients, and I try and use analogies a lot or examples to put them in the shoes. And the one I use a lot to try and have that conversation or to lead that conversation, I talk about airline travel. Yeah? And the majority of people that I see, when we live this constrained retirement because we haven't got enough capital, it's like traveling economy on planes, you know? The seats are cramped, the people are grumpy, the food is average, you're standing in line to go to the toilet. And that's how the majority of retirees are going to spend their remaining years after they finish their working life. And it's largely due to that apathy, Jim, that they've shown during their working life. And I know we're all busy, but I think that resonates with people, that because we've all been on that plane and stood in that queue and eaten that bad meal. So then I say that if we can have some foresight and if we can generally do some planning, we could move up the plane towards business class. And in business class, everything's not rosy, but the seats are more comfortable. The food's a bit better. You get a glass of wine in a proper glass and not a plastic cup when you have your meal. So life becomes a little bit more comfortable. And then if you really want to go hard, the first class represents those people who have been involved from an early age, actively planning, actively involved in their decision-making, actively involved in their savings. And because they've made hard decisions to defer their consumption now for the future, they can sit at the top end. They can have the leather seats. They can have the personalized service. They can have the pull-out bed. They can have the personalized cabin. And when they get to their destination, they're going to have a far better time than all the people that were in economy. So it's trying to have those difficult conversations, Jim, and showing people an analogy to say, well, we've been there. Where do we want to sit on the plane? Yeah. And how are we going to change where you're sitting now or where you're destined to sit to where you may want to sit? Yeah.
There you have it, Martin Harkness from InFocus Netherlands on beautiful Stirling Highway over there in Perth. What did you take from that? I got at least three things. One is the surprise his new clients have when he takes his clients on this bigger picture journey with a bigger conversation, which he believes is central to any effective conversation and decisions, in fact, about super. Super can't be had a conversation just in isolation. I love the airline analogy, did you? You know, the whole... You know, how would you want to travel long term? You know, when you get to this retirement, the journey, do you want to have in your retirement the uncomfortable seats, the poor food, the limited baggage space where you queue for the facilities? Or do you want to start thinking about what you need to do to get further up the plane? Better seats, better food, better service. It's a nice analogy to think and construct about how you want to live in retirement and how you want to plan for it. Obviously, the bias we all have, our apathy we have towards it, because it's just we'd rather make a buck today then worry about what we need to do tomorrow. And I think when coupled with the she'll be right. And so that, I think that's the third thing I picked up. You really put that big picture together quite nicely, I thought. We've got retiring baby boomers who are going to be calling upon the pension funds, less people in the workforce, rising property costs, we've got lowering savings habits, and we've got our Australian she'll be right attitude, which we won't be. We won't be light unless more and more people listen to leaders, financial leaders like Martin. So if you don't have a confident, impartial relationship with someone like Martin, who helps people along that unconflicted path, has those big conversations, and sometimes hard conversations too, to challenge some of our habits, then maybe we need to look for someone. So there you have it. You know, another great advisory firm run by another great advisor and team, hopefully changing the perception of what professional advice is all about without any real or perceived conflict, and who are making obvious difference in their clients' lives, not by any product selection or stuff, that was nothing about that, but just by professional care. Love to get your feedback as always. Hope this has helped you with your own decisions and approach to your own superannuation. These are great times for making great decisions about your future and to be aligning yourself, if you need to, with those sort of advisors that will not only make your advice valuable but also affordable. So Jim Stackpole signing out for now. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Certainty Advice Podcast with Jim Stackpole. To access all the materials from today's show or to join in the conversation, please head on over to seekingcertainty.com. Please let us know what you think. We'd love to hear your feedback. Seekingcertainty.com.